This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I am here this week with Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, welcome back, Rabia.
Thank you. We are in week 120 of this administration. 120. Feels like 1,200.
And for listeners who listen to 45th, but not our other podcast, Undisclosed, heads up, we're also about to start week one of the new HBO series on Anand's case.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. So for those of you who don't know, on HBO, there'll be a new documentary series called The Case Against Adnan Syed. It'll be dropping every Sunday night at 9 p.m. For the next four Sundays. And every Monday, we'll be dropping an Undisclosed episode where Susan, myself, and Colin Miller, a lawyer that we work with on Undisclosed, we'll be dissecting that episode and also doing a follow-up episode later in the week on Thursday. So definitely check it out. Subscribe. Watch the show. It's going to be great.
It is. I'm not saying this because I'm biased, but it's super good.
It's super good. Yeah. We didn't even make it.
And I'm biased.
And it's super good. Okay. We're a little bit biased. All right. So it's been a long ass week, Susan. I actually, before we got on the call, I was like, Susan, I don't even know. This happened the last week. Like, it's just all one big blur. But let's talk about this utterly humiliating international fiasco that we just witnessed with Trump and his second summit in North Korea.
Well, I didn't witness it because, like, I woke up at, like, pretty early the next morning after it, and I was, like, expecting updates on what happened, and it's like Trump's starting the way back. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah. There was going to be, like, a joint statement, but nothing happened. It just ended really abruptly. And I did see footage of, like, the Kim's, like, caravan, like, of cars leaving his motorcade, which was about 100 cars deep or something crazy. And it had, like, men with sunglasses running alongside the cars. I don't know what the point of that was. But anyway, nothing happened. Nothing happened except for, I think, Trump severely damaged any kind of leverage that we might have had. Now, this is accompanied with reports, by the way, that before he went for the summit, he did what any good dictator-loving person would do. He reached out to Moscow to ask for advice in dealing with North Korea.
Yeah. Well, I will say it's not what happened at the summit itself that was the problem. It's the fact that they had a summit with that level of preparation or lack thereof.
Lack thereof, right.
Trump had to walk at that point. It sounds like there's basic – well, it's hard to tell. From reports, it sounds like possible that basically North Korea asked for, like, full relief or – very substantial relief from sanctions in exchange for either a shutdown or partial shutdown of one of their major reactor test sites. But the problem, what happened was the failure was guaranteed when they walked in there because they were on different pages. They did no prep. You can't just get the two heads of state together and say, make a deal. The deal is already done before you ever had the photo op.
I mean, there was literally no groundwork that was laid for this.
There was groundwork. It's just they weren't actually on the same page. Having a summit wasn't going to help.
What was the groundwork? People, I mean,
you had Pompeo and you had, what's his face? I forgot his name already. Making his trips over to talk to high-level North Korean officials. And it became apparent that they actually weren't on the same page and they still want to have the summit. Like, the summit was the goal for North Korea in many respects and Trump.
Right, it was. But the thing is, I mean, the goal was to actually come back with a win. And that's what I mean. If you're not even on the same page, you're not even close, then that's not groundwork. I don't understand what happened in those meetings with Pompeo where he's like, yep, we're ready to go. This is a done deal. Like, how could that even be? But it could be that Trump just thought, you know what, I can make this happen because Trump very much believes in his power of persuasion and all that stuff.
Well, the North Koreans seemed like that's part of what they're banking on. They were not dealing with Pompeo. They were like standing him up for meetings repeatedly. They were not.
That was a bad sign.
It was very clear that their goal was to get Trump in the room.
That was a bad sign. Yeah.
And, you know, we're not even sure Trump walked away. For all we know, it could have been Kim Jong-un walked away.
Well, you know, Trump really wanted, I think what Trump really wants, there's a couple things happening. There's the Cohen hearings happening at the same time. Maybe it's a great time to distract. But also, you know, Trump kind of wants the Nobel. And apparently he was ready to offer a peace declaration that would mark, like, the symbolic end of the Korean conflict and also to open up some level of diplomatic ties between the United States and North Korea. So he actually was apparently ready to do that. But North Korea was like, we're not there yet. And he has mentioned the Nobel a couple of times in the last, I don't know, a few months. Yeah. So people think that that might be why. Yeah, one of the most appalling things that came out of this, other than the fact that he got absolutely nothing for it, is that, you know, he defended Kim Jong-un when asked about Otto Warmbier. And again, that was a college student who was tortured by North Korea. He was returned to the U.S. 2017 in such horrific condition. He died shortly thereafter. His parents were then invited to the State of the Union last year, you might remember. And, you know, Trump kind of used them, I guess, in a way as political props, you know, saying, I got him back. But now what Trump says is, Kim tells me that he didn't know about it, and I will take him at his word, and that Kim felt badly about it.
He strongly denied it.
He strongly denied it, yeah.
When someone strongly denies it, and they're a man in charge with power, you believe them in Trump's world.
Yeah. That was pretty shameful.
And Putin strongly denied election interference. Yeah. MBS strongly denied killing Khashoggi.
Yeah. You know, the thing, what I understand with this is that Trump never had to touch this. He could have avoided the issue altogether. Is this some level of like pandering to Kim? Why did he even, he could just be like, we didn't talk about it.
It's because he's signaling that he does not care about human rights in the North Korean regime and that that's not on the table. He's not looking for any changes there. He's not looking to stop Kim Jong-un from murdering whoever he wants to. To Trump, I mean, there's basically Trump, his foreign policy has signaled again and again and again that he will not take any action. The U.S. foreign policy will not acknowledge or care about what foreign dictators do to murder and torture their own citizens. Or in the case of one Saudi, joint Saudi-U.S. citizen who was tortured, even U.S. citizens.
Well, you know, the parents of Otto Warmbier did issue a statement in response to this, and I was really bracing myself for Trump to go after them, but he didn't. He was distracted by other things or something. Maybe,
dude, you know he wanted to.
Oh, I know.
I'm convinced he wanted to.
Of course.
Because there was that tweet. He clearly didn't write the tweet. It was a threaded, like, better written tweet. But, like, there was no way that was done, like, at the White House comm staff.
What
choice.
Was it?
Like, that
I
was, like,
it.
A compromised tweet. I was just like, I hate it when I misinterpreted. Oh. What I meant was something. It was just some bullshit. But it seemed like Trump's instinct would have been to attack them, and that was how they kind of mitigated it. Now, the worst part of all of that was not actually even the hearing or the summit itself. It was Trump's appearance on Hannity. Did you see that?
Oh, God. Did that happen before or after the summit?
It was after. It was his, like, apology tour to explain and, like, have Hannity justify why he got no deal.
That was the one where Hannity inserted himself and became a witness in the Cohen stuff or the Mueller investigation, right?
Yeah. But Trump was, like, the actual words he was using, I'm sitting there watching this kind of late at night and, like, what? How is this real life? Because he is talking as if he has suffered a breakup and, like, he's talking about how he and Un have this, like, Kim Jong-un has this, like, connection. And, you know, he's a special guy, and it's not the right time right now, but they're going to get there, and they really feel like, you know, they just need to come back and try again, like, later on. It was really disturbing the way he talked about how, like, impressive he was and how clever he was.
He just loves brutes. I think he loves brutal, because, you know, when you think about Putin, I always think Putin's got something.
He's jealous of the power.
Maybe that's what it is. I mean, yeah, whether it's Sisi, Erdogan, all these people. I mean, with Putin, I'm always like, well, Putin's probably got something on him, a lot of stuff on him. Kim doesn't, probably, but these are the people he admires and looks up to. And one thing he did announce, I think it came a couple days after he returned from the summit, was that they'd be canceling, like, exercises, joint exercises with South Korea, United States. And he's like, it'll save us billions of dollars. This is kind of shocking because it's completely giving North Korea what they want without anything in return. And just yesterday, there's been reporting that there's satellite imagery showing that North Korea might be taking steps to reactivate a partially decommissioned long-range rocket test site on its west coast. Their experts were watching this. They're saying that's evidence that workers are actually rebuilding at this launching station. And in a couple of days after the summit, a rocket engine test stand and large transfer structure have been reassembled. So, okay. Now, in the light of all this, I just thought that it might be important to point out the fact that, by the way, we don't have a Secretary of Defense. You know,
we don't have a lot of things.
We don't have a lot of things.
We have ambassadors to half the countries where there's crisis going on.
Right. But, you know,
we don't have a Secretary of Defense. We don't even have an acting one. We don't even have an acting Secretary of Defense, which Trump likes to have.
Yeah. Trump is acting.
Speaking of acting cabinet members, Whitaker is out.
Oh, okay.
On Saturday, he left the DOJ suddenly. He was supposed to stay on after Barr was confirmed. And he did not.
I did not know that. I missed that. Totally. Okay.
He just, and Saturday, he was his last day at the DOJ.
Okay. Do we know why? Did he say anything? Nothing?
No, but he was supposed to stay on, so it's kind of intriguing. I mean, it could just be that they're going to call him back to testify more about what Trump ordered in regards to the SDNY investigations.
Or could he be getting ready to become the chief of staff now?
No. Doesn't sound like it. It sounds like he was leaving government.
Ah, okay.
Maybe not. Well, maybe. Who knows?
Good riddance.
I mean, Trump does have kind of has a chief of staff who's also doing like three other jobs and we never hear about, but whatever.
I feel like Whitaker is the guy who's not going to go away. If he can climb higher somewhere in the administration, he will. So I don't think it's the last we've heard of him. But anyway, okay.
Well, DOJ doesn't want him. No one there wants to deal with his dumb ass. So if he goes anywhere, it's going to be, you're right, probably executive branch into the White House.
Yeah.
Next week is a big week for Robbie and I because the HBO show is going to begin. And we have an event coming up. One in New York and then later on in Baltimore. And I am sad that my new Stitch Fix box is not coming until after because I was really excited to see what I got. I was going to wear it.
Oh, no.
I know. I'm like, I should like change like, the dates.
You should change the dates because, you know, these events are like attended by media and you got to look cute in our pictures. And Stitch Fix always makes sure that we do.
Because I realized that apparently I've gotten to the point in my life where my closet is like pajama pants and work suits. I have like no in between. I really need to fill in like the middle area there.
Yeah, it's been a little bit stressful for me trying to figure out what to wear. But what I love about Stitch Fix is like it's not just that they just send you clothing, whatever. They are an online personal styling service. Okay, so it's all customized to fit your body, your budget, and your style. And also for the very stylish occasions like the ones that we are attending nowadays.
I was legit skeptical about the whole like styling thing because I didn't know. I have now used it for close to a year and I love it. And the styling is actually real and really good. They definitely tailor it to your lifestyle and they get stuff that's like really much in your, like what the stuff you're gonna wear every day anyway, but cooler and better looking.
Yeah. And the quality of the clothing is really beautiful.
Yeah, they get great prices and some good stuff.
Yeah. And I've got a daughter who's in college and there's times when I open up one of those boxes, she's always like hovering around. I'm like, get away. Just get away. This is mine. What I love is that they also pair you with your own personal stylist. So it's not just every time, it's not like a different person. That person comes to know you and they handpick the items. You can try them on, just pay for what you love and return the rest. So get started now at stitchfix.com/45th and you can get an extra 25% off when you keep all the items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/45th to get started today. stitchfix.com/45th. Right, so as all this stuff in North Korea is happening, or not happening, as it were, you know, the Cohen hearings were ongoing, and there's been some more stuff to talk about. So let's see what you have to say about more developments in this story.
Yeah, so you did not join us last week for our Cohen recap right after it ended. We tried to push it off as long as possible recording, finally had to go ahead. You know, in the week since, there's been a few more developments. Cohen did have a day of closed-door testimony. The biggest sort of news stories have kind of been the past couple of days where this stuff about the Cohen pardon have come out. And there was a Wall Street Journal article yesterday that I am extremely suspicious about because it seems like the only source for it was Giuliani, talking about how Cohen's attorney supposedly brought up the pardons. Not Trump's. It was Cohen's attorneys that brought them up. And two of the attorneys, didn't go along with it. But apparently Giuliani was like, well, nothing's going to happen until all this is over. But it seemed like a Giuliani-planted story, which makes sense because it would be very, very beneficial to Trump if the whole pardon discussion was started by and instigated by Cohen and not him, obviously.
Has anybody from Cohen's side like repudiated it and said no?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know right now because Cohen can't talk openly about it, but we know from his testimony that that's apparently part of an active investigation in New York at the moment. And if it was just Cohen's attorney that brought up the pardon thing, that wouldn't seem to be a basis for investigation. Now, that doesn't mean that Trump is not responsible for this whole atmosphere by him repeatedly bringing up pardons. He's definitely planned the idea out there, which severely undermines any investigation ongoing. Speaking of which, remember that, like, I don't know, like 6-week period when Trump went pardon crazy and then he hasn't issued a pardon since?
When was that?
That was like a year ago.
Okay. Well, who is there to pardon since? I mean, we've got Manafort, we've got Roger Stone hasn't been convicted yet, right?
Flynn, Manafort, Cohen. I mean, you could do a preemptive pardon if you wanted to.
Okay, that's true. I keep forgetting about that craziness.
Papadopoulos.
Okay, so what do you think's going on then?
If there is actually an SDNY investigation, which presumably there is, as much as I don't want to rely on Cohen for anything, I don't see the Giuliani Wall Street Journal story being true, because that just wouldn't explain an investigation. Mm. And the comments we do have from like Lanny Davis and others suggest that there was more to it, whatever Cohen testified to before the House committee. Yeah. And then we've also had more information on the Stormy story and how the payments came out from Trump. And there's a New York Times article, it's definitely worth checking out, that breaks down the timing of when Trump was writing these checks to Cohen for $35,000 a pop to cover the Stormy Daniels payments.
Right, right.
And you can just see that he literally was in the White House doing the Dallas president, and he'd take a break and go write a check to Cohen to reimburse him for the hush money payments. Yeah, that's how this presidency rolls.
Mm, at least didn't Venmo it to him.
Yeah. Oh, that was just Lindsey Graham's was talking to some interview, and he was like, I found people don't typically write a check when they think they're doing criminal activity. Like, yes, they do. In white collar context, they aren't dealing with bags of cash. That's how they do it. That's how bribery cases work.
Right, 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 right.
I mean, maybe it's not a check, but they'll wire it. So it's like, you know, have a name on it. The whole idea is to send the money in a way it's not detectable for what it really is. You just disguise it as a normal payment. Mm-hmm. So Lindsey Graham's apparently echoing the new talking points, which is that Trump did not intend to engage in criminal behavior because he wrote a check.
Yeah. Lindsey Graham is, I don't know. I don't get him. He confuses me. He's all over the place.
He is power hungry, has little fixed in the way of morals, and will go where the wind goes.
Yeah, but I don't know if he thinks he's going to get any of that power like through Trump, because I don't think Trump respects him. I don't think Trump gives a crap about him.
Yeah, but he has influence right now. He does have influence on the White House. He does have the ear at the president. That matters for something.
I guess so. All right.
I mean, he did complain about how apparently he talked to Trump and was like, you never want to invade the countries I want to invade.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? That was a real conversation.
Yeah, he was all telling right. It was a joking story. He was like, yeah. He was like, oh, gosh darn it. How come you never invade the people I want to invade? Because Graham's opposed to some of the bellicose rhetoric coming out of the Trump administration. Not opposed to it in general, just opposed to certain targets that Trump has chosen. He wants to attack different people. Well, this week has also been an active week for Trump in terms of investigations heating up multiple fronts. Not the Mueller front, which is still chugging along, filing against Roger Stone and Manafort for his sentencing, and Roger Stone because he is Roger Stone and is determined to go to prison based on Instagram, which I think he may succeed in that goal.
Yeah. That guy, man.
Dude cannot keep his mouth shut.
Why doesn't somebody take his phone and just delete the apps, man? Get rid of all the social. He cannot keep himself off of, I don't know, with Snapchat. He's on everything. He's on MySpace. I don't know what his problem is. He can't keep off social media.
He has a very, very certain gag order. Well, the new thing is not so much the Instagram. He's annoyed or upset that his book that he had planned to publish might be a violation of the gag order. So we'll see what happens there. The Manafort stuff, like we're going to have sentencing there. Manafort is going to get a very, very long prison sentence. And then we'll see if Trump pardons him. That's what we've been waiting for all along. But other investigations, not from Mueller, have definitely taken a really busy turn lately. Most notably, the House Oversight Committee, which sent 81 people and organizations subpoenas for document production.
Exciting.
For a variety of topics, but a lot of it mostly based on like a Russian investigation stuff, some public corruption, some obstruction of justice kind of issues. Overall, I would say I was not completely impressed with the list. You know, if I was in charge of Congress and could subpoena where I wanted to, I'd probably choose different targets. But what apparently Congress is trying to do is basically, as someone put it, it's a DIY Mueller investigation. Mm. They're recreating the requests that have already gone out, recreating the documents that have already been obtained by Mueller, so that should the Mueller report get quashed and never come to light, they can recreate it, essentially.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so you think that's a possibility, which I guess it is a possibility.
That appears to be from statements that have come out about who they went for and who they targeted and the requests they made. They did check for interference with the ongoing investigation, so they were trying to make sure they didn't overlap with that. So it's not going to break – whatever they find is not going to break new ground, it seems like. These are all requests that theoretically have all been produced already to Mueller. But it would be a way of getting those documents to someone else's hands in a way that Barr could never prevent it from coming
out. Right. And you know, just I think yesterday there was some reporting that Barr made very clear that he's our new attorney general, just to remind folks, that he would not recuse himself from these investigations. So that's that. Yeah, I guess this might be the way to do it, but...
Well, now that... So he did talk to ethics staff. Ethics staff did say that he did not need to recuse. And right. Now that they agree with him, he's happy to abide by it. Even though when Whitaker was told he needed to recuse, they're like, we don't need to listen to staff.
Why do you think the difference was there?
I can't imagine what it was.
Well... You know, today I saw a tweet or I saw a news report where they interviewed somebody who's like in their 90s. And this person's like, I'm literally just hanging on for dear life until the Mueller report comes out. But given what we're facing right now, it might not happen. But with the House Oversight Committee, as you're collecting all this evidence, are we just basically heading toward, because at the end of the day, I just want to know where this is all going. It's not just going to be like a bunch of indictments against these people, but are we heading towards impeachment? Is this like what they're hoping to do is build a foundation for impeachment proceedings?
If warranted, that's the House's goal. Yeah. I saw the article you talked about too, about the people holding out,
right.
Waiting for the Mueller investigation to live long enough. And there's such probably commentary and like meaning of life and the shortness of it there. But I also I think after all this time, expectations have not been overhyped necessarily, but misdirected to the point where it'd be hard to see how a report could be done that would actually satisfy everyone. Because
right.
People, as I do white collar defense, and for me, and when I'm looking at a case, what I would call a smoking gun, what I would call like a bombshell, it's not necessarily what you would call on a TV show, for instance.
Right.
Conspiracies that were done on the fly, which is a lot of conspiracies in the white collar world, ones that were like not, you know, organized. It's not organized crime. It's planning out a crime in advance, how to do it. It's a crime that develops in response to business needs. Those conspiracies are always vastly more dumb than you could possibly imagine. They are always incredibly disjointed, incredibly stupid, and incredibly boneheaded. They're not planned out well, usually. They often are just repeated attempts to get the same thing done after trying one way that fails, they'll try another way. And they're often to themselves, like, they're not sitting around talking about, wow, this crime we're doing is really crimey. They will never acknowledge right. themselves a lot of the time that what they're doing is criminal behavior. It's just responding to a situation by any means necessary, including ones that happen to be prohibited by federal law. So, in that scenario, you don't have ever have a smoking gun of the sort. Like, there's no email that says, go ahead and, like, make sure to violate whatever federal statute by doing X, Y, Z.
Right.
And what we've seen so far is already incredibly incriminating.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know the ultimate players involved. That's not to say we have, like, answers here. We don't. But we already know that Manafort was sharing polling data with a GRU agent. What we see is already consistent with what you'd expect in a potential criminal conspiracy of the nature being alleged. But even in like a comparative like white collar case where it's not involving matters of, you know, state of the republic, even when it's an ironclad case of like corruption or what have you, you're not going to find like the perfect scripted out story. It's not going to be neat.
It won't be
that
sexy.
It's going to be messy. It's going to be. No, and it's going to be a lot of confusion from everyone. The people involved are just confused, the ones on the outside, which means there's never a clear-cut like admission from, certainly not the higher-ups, but from the people involved, like, oh, I'm doing a crime right now, which people, it seems like it's gotten to the point where, short of that, no one's going to call the Mueller probe, like, conclusive.
Mm.
When we're dealing in a universe where conclusions like that are impossible to obtain in most cases.
Right. But, you know, I would say this, like, you know, we know, like, in a criminal proceeding, right? I mean, there's plenty of times prosecutors piece together circumstantial evidence and can get a conviction. And to that extent,
yeah,
right. So, I mean, like, there's so much here. There is so much here that's much more than circumstantial that could result in something like that in a different circumstance. But the problem is...
But this is not an ordinary case.
Right, right. That's a problem. And there's still the question of, can a sitting president be indicted? I mean, like, it seems to
and
be...
And even then, okay, take the example of white-collar, like, cases... You don't usually see the CEO going down for it. Even when the CEO was involved and directed and knew about the scheme, what you see is like local country managers or VPs of whatever going down. In this case, everyone's concerned about the president.
Cohen said, he testified. He's like, look, this guy didn't give direct orders. He just kind of gave nods.
Because CEOs never do.
Right.
And in any comparative case, like it is extremely unusual for the CEO and a company to go down.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean the CEOs don't know what was happening.
Right, 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 right. They serve at the pleasure of the CEO, I guess. There was this whole, this kind of occurred to me too. On one hand, one thing Cohen said was that, you know, Trump didn't expect to win and he didn't want to win. He actually said, I think he actually said he didn't even want to win. Like, it was just one big marketing campaign for his business. So how do you kind of reconcile that with, you know, the idea that maybe he was colluding to win?
That it's Cohen, and I don't believe what he says.
Okay,
like, he's not saying he's lying, but also at the same time, like, if Trump is like, I can see Trump talking and probably is like, yeah, this is going to be great. Even if I lose, I'm going to have a great media empire after this.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean he wasn't really trying to win, because he was clearly really trying to win.
I mean, Trump is exactly the kind of person who would cheat to win just for the sake of winning. I mean, it's kind of like how he wants the Nobel. He just, you know, there are certain things he wants to achieve. He's really, really trying to make up for whatever it is he's trying to make up for. But I can see. I see what you're saying. If you're like me, the list of books that you want to read or those people suggest you read is never ending and it's always expanding. And believe me, this has been a lifelong struggle for me. My bookcase has grown under the weight of books that I want to read and I can never get to. And my phone, my Kindle app is just full of millions of them too. But here's the thing, I really just don't have time to read them all, but I want to absorb all the information that's inside them. And that's why I love our sponsor, Blinkist, because they have solved our long list of must-reads once and for all. What Blinkist does is that it's the only app that takes thousands of best-selling nonfiction books and distills them down to the most impactful elements. So you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes, all on your phone. With Blinkist, you can expand your knowledge and learn more in just 15 minutes than you can in almost any other way. Plus, you can listen anywhere. I listen to Blinkist when I'm working out, when I'm driving and doing my chores, when I'm doing the dishes. You know, I can get through a book that I've been wanting to listen to or learn about, like, in 15, 20 minutes. It's fantastic. Now, I recently listened to a book that caught my eye called What to Eat When. It's by Michael Rosen, Michael Krupain, and Ted Spiker. And it's a book that just came out last year. And it shows you not just what to eat, but when you eat that matters. It's really interesting as somebody who's exploring, you know, about how to eat healthy and trying to inculcate healthy habits in my diet. I really learned a lot, and I have adjusted my eating schedule during the day because of this book. Look, Blinkist is constantly curating and adding new titles from the best of lists, and you're always getting the most powerful ideas in a made-for-mobile format. And 5 million people are using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. So get started today. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/45th to start your 7-day free trial. That's Blinkist. It's spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/45th, and start your free 7-day trial. Blinkist.com/45th. Where are we going to next?
So another sort of somewhat overlooked Trump tweet from this week had to do with Trump's property in Scotland, or the one in Aberdeen.
The golf course?
Yes. Well, he has two golf courses over there, but this one was about his Trump International Golf Club Scotland, which he bought in like 06 and like opened, 2011, a few years back now. And he suddenly on Twitter decided to start promoting it. He quote tweeted the Trump organization was like, it's a great course. Also important to the relationship with the UK. Well,
what?
It's not just typical. Yeah, you did see that one. It was pretty. I mean, the thing was, though, this tweet was not the regular kind of like Trump property promotion that he usually does. This was much more insidious because the timing comes 2 days after Trump lost a ruling that ordered him to pay Scotland's legal fees in a lawsuit that he lost back in 2015. So, yeah, Trump, as of Thursday, was owing some amount of money, definitely in the millions, don't know how many millions, to Scotland for his lawsuit against the wind turbines.
Why don't we know how many millions?
So, because they didn't release the judgment yet. Okay. I'm sure we'll find out eventually. But, yeah. And now the president is going on Twitter and being like, this property that I'm suddenly in debt on, more in debt on, is important to our relationship with the United Kingdom. So he's explicitly tying the well-being of his property to U.S. foreign policy.
That is wow. I did totally miss that, and I cannot believe how blatant that is. So is he just trying to like raise the money that he's going to owe Scotland by promoting tourism to this place?
No, I think he's trying to tell the UK not to try and enforce the debt that he now owes.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about it like that. I mean, that's nefarious. Oh my Lord.
Yeah.
I think the UK is going to be like, here's a middle finger. they don't give a crap about him and his threats. I mean, he's already abandoned.
They have to. Of course, he's the president of the United States. It's like a key cornerstone of foreign policy for Europe and England in
particular.
He's
already completely abandoned them. He's like, y'all are on your own.
They can't not care about this. They have to care. Like, they, I mean, yes, it'd be nice if they didn't, but they have to care about this. On the other hand, it's not like the UK can, like, order a Scottish court to change its ruling. Like the U.S., they have, in theory, judicial independence. So it's not clear what happened. But let's say this ruling, you know, does stand. They don't try and take it away. To actually enforce it, Scotland would have to seize the president's property.
Right.
That's a dangerous move. So even if they're not going to overturn the ruling, which I don't think even Trump would expect them to do, maybe he would, but they're not going to do that. What it could affect is how they follow up. Because when you win a lawsuit, you don't just get money handed to you. It's not like you instantly like press a lever and win, the money's handed to you.
Right.
You either have the opponent pay you, and if they don't agree to pay you, you got to go force them to pay by seizing their shit and auctioning it off. So now Scotland's got a choice. Does it seize Trump's little golf course, or does it do nothing and let the judgment just sit there until Trump gets out of office?
Yeah, I mean, that's the obvious choice. He's not going to be president forever. Just give it a couple of years and they've got him where they need him, right? And in the meantime, there's nothing he can do because, I mean, unless he can force, I don't know, like he can force some kind of settlement.
Well, that's going to be the result. That's going to be the result right now, is that Trump is just going to sit there with the judgment against him and it's going to be unsatisfied when if he was anyone else, it would not go that way. So Trump is literally using his presidency for his financial advantage and invoking his presidency to achieve financial advantage. And it's just all out in the open because that's how he rolls. And apparently the GOP has committed itself to corruption. Can't count as corruption if it's done openly. But here's the good news. Trump lost that lawsuit and now those windmills were completed and now in operation outside of his golf course.
That's fantastic. And, you know, especially because he doesn't even understand how any of that shit works, which...
If you want to go, dude, go read Trump's old tweets on wind turbines just to like for a laugh. He's always like going on. He's like, wind turbines are going to destroy all the wildlife. They make bird soup.
Girl, we don't even have to go that far back because he brought this up at the CPAC convention. He talked about that in his 2-hour rambling speech.
Did he talk about eagle soup?
He didn't talk about that. But he talked about, he said, you know, this is exactly what he said. He was talking about the proposed new Green Deal, or Green New Deal, excuse me. And he goes, you know, when the wind stops blowing, that's the end of your electric. And then he started pretending like, you know, he's miming somebody. Let's hurry up. Darling, darling, is the wind blowing today? I'd like to watch television, darling. He actually said that.
Oh, my God.
Our president said that. Yeah. He doesn't understand how any of that works. But I'm glad those turbines will be there to make him crazy. So Susan, here's the thing. In the last year, I have had a newfound love of going bra shopping. And this is something most women hate to do. And I have always hated to do because my body has changed a lot. With 3 kids, my weight up and down, all kinds of like other reasons. I don't want to keep going in and getting fit. But for a couple of different reasons, I now love doing it. Number one, because I've been working out, taking care of myself. I am in a place where I know if I buy some nice under things, I'm going to keep them for a while. But the second reason is Third Love, because Third Love makes it so, so easy for me to find the right size of bra, because they've got 70 sizes, 70 half cup sizes, and you never have to go in for a fitting.
Yeah, Third Love is amazing. And this is like a very, very specific like use. But I love them because they have great wireless bras. So when I'm trying to go to a prison to visit a defendant or witness the case I'm working on,
yeah,
I got a good option to go there. They don't let you in with any metal in your bra. So having a really normal feeling, non-sports, like you're not going to wear a sports bra and a suit. So I'm a huge fan of Third Love ones that do the job, look great, and feel great, and get me through the prison doors.
Very, very specific use. Now, for those of us who like to wear underwire, but make sure that it's comfortable, what I love about Third Love bras is that they are just beautifully made. The fabric's great. The quality's great. The stitching is so comfortable. The straps don't slip. And that's actually an issue I've had like my whole life, is straps just slip. And maybe because I've just had very nice, soft, round shoulders, but these these straps do not slip.
And no digging in. Worse than slipping is the digging in your shoulder.
The digging in, yes, yes. But I also love the fact that they have tagless labels. Anyway, the point is we love Third Love bras for so many different reasons, and we know our listeners will too.
Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now they're offering our listeners 15% off for your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/45th now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first order. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today.
So should we talk about this convention?
Oh, the CPAC. I did not, so I could not watch that. I try and watch a lot of the Trump speeches just to make sure I know what kind of stuff he's saying. I couldn't do CPAC. It was like on a Saturday, whatever day it was, I was doing something else. And I read recaps of it later, and wow, it sounds like 2 hours of craziness.
Well, you know, my thoughts and prayers go out to the journalists who had to be there and were tweeting the entire convention, and I followed along online, but I did catch at least 40-50% of Trump's speech, and it was 2 hours long. He was sweating the whole time. He got on the stage to chant of lock her up. He humped the flag. He hugged it, but he may as well have humped it. And then it just...
So Rabia, when we started the episode, Rabia's like, we're going to make the image for this episode, Trump humping the flag. And I'm like, wait, I don't... Okay, where are you going to get this picture from? And she's like, it's at CPAC.
Yeah, he did. It is just disgusting. And he just... So you didn't catch any of this speech at all, Susan?
Not live. I just read recaps. I couldn't do it.
Okay. Gosh, the things he went on about for 2 hours. Obviously... And he talked about the Mueller's investigation. He talked about Sessions recusing himself. He actually mimicked Sessions with a Southern drawl and was like, I'm going to recuse myself.
That part I kind of wanted to see. I wanted to hear what Trump's Southern accent would have been. I'm going to recuse myself.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Well, Susan, you can actually do a Southern accent because you're Southern.
Well, I'm doing a Trump, like a Queens version of a New York, Alabama session. Like, I'm imagining like the world's worst episode of True Blood.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah, I had to stop that after season one. But here's the thing. After he mimicked Sessions, he goes, and I said, why the hell didn't he tell me that before I put him in? How do you recuse yourself? So he's making it very clear that he wanted his attorney general to be involved in this investigation. I mean, like, he's so clear now. He's not even hiding it. And the GOP doesn't even care. He's like, yeah, I wanted my attorney general to oversee this investigation. And now that's exactly what he's got. We talked about the wind turbine thing and how he thinks when the wind is not blowing, you cannot watch television. He talked about TiVo, how he loves this TiVo. And I didn't know.
We know.
I didn't even know that thing still existed.
He has like a souped up TiVo. That's why he can like live tweet Fox and Friends like 2 hours after it started.
I mean, that's what it is. He talked about mothers in Central America. You know, they love their daughters and they gave massive amounts of birth control because that's how birth control works. Because they knew they're going to be raped on their way here, but you know, they did it anyways. He went back to his inauguration crowd size. It was just everywhere. He also said, you know, I'm in love. You're in love. We're all in love together. Boy.
Wait, what?
Yep. He said, you know, yeah, he's like, you know, talking here, speaking here is easy because, you know, I'm in love, you're in love, y'all love me. I think it was just after North Korea, after Cohen, he was just like, I just need some affirmation. I need an adoring crowd. And that's what he got. He wouldn't get off the goddamn stage. And we've got a highlights audio that we're going to play so you can hear exactly how crazy this was.
Yeah, no, I'm with Hass. Hard pass.
Hard pass on you.
Well, our listeners go into just the Sessions clip, and that's it.
All right. Well, you can do that. But for the listeners who want to hear the rest of it, take a listen here.
And all of a sudden, they're trying to take you out with bullshit, okay? With bullshit. The attorney general says, I'm going to recuse myself. I'm going to recuse. And I said, why the hell didn't he tell me that before I put him in?
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Right now, we have people in Congress that hate our country. How did they do in their country? Just ask them, how did they do? Did they do well? Were they succeeding? Just ask that question. Somebody would say, oh, that's terrible that he brings that up, but that's okay. I don't mind. I'll bring it up. How did they do in their country? Not so good. I have one of the great inventions in history. It's called TiVo. When a tree falls, you can't let the environmentalist
say you can't take that tree out. It becomes like a matchstick, that tree. It hits a flame, it goes up. The leaves, every once in a while, you have to remove the leaves because they are so... A guy smoking a cigarette, he throws it away. He doesn't mean it. The thing catches on fire. We'll lose 400,000 acres and people are killed. And by the way, as of probably today or tomorrow, we will actually have 100% of the caliphate in Syria, 100%. There's so much love in this room. It's easy to talk. You can talk your heart out. You really can.
Mr. President, sir.
David Weigel, he wrote an article, some arena. No, listen to this. He wrote an article. He got there 4 hours early. He took pictures of an empty arena. He then put out a note, something to the effect, not very good crowd size, Mr. President. He got there 4 or 5 hours early because he doesn't fly private, you know. And maybe it's because of the carbon footprint. Do you think maybe that's it? Maybe. It must be the carbon footprint. He just doesn't want private. The crazy female senator from the state of Ohio. The state of Hawaii, right? She's like a crazed person. I mean, I was in the White House for a long time, months. I had cabin fever in the White House. But I was there, I don't know, for a number of months, through Christmas. I spent my New Year's all by myself. It was me and about 500 men and women outside with machine guns. I never saw so many beautiful-looking machine guns. I'd look at that equipment, I'd say, man, Oprah Winfrey, Michelle Obama, and President Obama. And they campaigned for her, and they worked so hard. And all our man had was Trump. And we kicked their ass. Mothers who love their daughters give them massive amounts of birth control pills. Because they know their daughters are going to be raped on the way up to our southern border. Think of that. True story. But everyone in this great country, right now, because of our great new economy, is doing well, except, of course, for the Never Trumpers. But they are on mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Mouth-to-mouth. Mouth-to-mouth. I'm watching those doors. Not one person's left, and I've been up here a long time. I said, Matt, is that okay? He said, I love it. Don't leave. But not one person.
Two stories to run through real quick, because this is worth hitting on. First is the AT&T merger. We had the article about how Gary Cohn, who, you know, is not at DOJ, was told by Trump to get the AT&T merger, get DOJ to block it, which I'm torn about because they should have, you know, I think it'd be better for everyone if it had gotten blocked, but not to have it blocked at Trump's order because he's pissed about CNN having bad coverage of him. So that happened. And of course, the only reaction from Republicans is like, oh, it's an anonymous source. We didn't get Gary Cohn himself to confirm that it happened, so it didn't. But this is immensely damaging to our democracy to know that companies have to deal with the fact if they take Trump-opposed action, their merger is probably not going to go through. Their other regulatory actions are not going to go favorably to them, which we can see with the T-Mobile case, another merger case. This time, the merger was supported by the Trump administration, ended up going through. And we now know, thanks to ProPublica, that did some investigation, T-Mobile CEOs and executives, in the time before the merger got approved, they stayed at Trump hotels twice. Mm. Like two times, basically. And they increased like by 85% or something insane after the merger was approved. Wow. Which, you know, if it was before, if it was reversed, if all these stays were happening before, I mean, you know that part of the calculus there is like, let's stay at his hotel a lot. That's going to impress him. Maybe our merger will go through. This was the reverse. It was already done. It looks like a quid pro quo. That's why they're spending so much money, like almost $200,000 at Trump hotels following the merger's passing. Wow. So, yeah, CEOs in America know that if they want to get good results, just spend a lot of money at hotels, which are a great way of laundering money because you got extra rooms to fill, just, you know, pay for a couple more of them. And then we have the two stories. The one came out earlier about Jared Kushner, and tonight one about Ivanka, So we found out a couple days ago that Jared Kushner had his security was held up for a while. We knew that.
Right.
In fact, in order to get it passed towards the, I think, what, spring of last year, Trump ordered Chief of Staff John Kelly to do it. And John Kelly was so PO'd by the whole situation that he wrote a memo documenting the fact that he was ordered to pass Jared Kushner's security clearance, even though it had been blocked at about every ministry level there was, because he has massive security issues that were not going to make it. If he was not the president's son-in-law, it would never have gotten passed.
Right.
And then tonight, we found out that Ivanka had the same deal happen. She, too, had a security clearance held up, and it was only passed when Trump ordered it to be passed.
Wow.
Now, yeah. The interesting line to me, though, it was the CNN that broke the story about Ivanka. Well, one, there was Trump's line about why the security clearance should be passed, and that was, what's the big deal? They're going back to New York soon anyway. That was his argument for why the security clearance should be passed.
What?
Like, one, why is that an argument they need a security clearance? And two, why aren't they back in New York? But also interesting was that in Ivanka's story, they're talking about how, well, they're spouses. So for security clearance procedures, if your spouse is a massive security risk, that's going to reflect on you too. So that could have explained her holdup about why she also couldn't get it, because her husband, Jared, has some massive issues. And that, like, at least four countries were overheard talking about how easy it would be to manipulate him and to, like, use his financial issues to their advantage. Apparently, she has issues that are distinct and unrelated to Jared's issues that held up her security clearance.
I can completely see that. I mean, look at all of her international dealings. I mean, it's not like she's somebody who's sheltered. I can totally imagine. Look, you know, my sister, I have a younger sister who worked for government, and she had to get a security clearance. And when she did her security clearance, and look, she's just like work. She's like a cog in the wheel. She's not like White House level. She's a cog in the IT world, okay? She had to, it wasn't just her getting cleared. They had to check all of her family's backgrounds. I had to submit, my parents had to submit, my brother, all of us had to submit all of our travel overseas, you know. I mean, like, it was so, and for Ivanka, right? I mean, like, considering her contacts, international, and her family's contacts and the shady shit and all the oligarchs she knows, are you kidding me? Of course she's going to have her own issues.
But they've not come up as much. It's been a lot of focus been on Jared's problems, which are more immediate and more pressing. You know, the Qatari government just accidentally happened to bail him out of a $1 billion building that was failing in New York, things like that. But Ivanka has her own history, which stems from her role in the Trump Organization, which apparently is also causing issues. But they both have security clearances now. And like Rabia said, this is a big deal. People in government know that this is a huge important, like, this is like an all-consuming issue for people that are trying to get in the government or in the government that have security clearances that are blocked. It's a big deal for any, like, I had an internship and it was crazy the amount of security clearances, like the amount of investigation they had to do.
It takes a long time and it costs a lot of money too, by the way. I mean, like, if you get a security clearance, they're worth like $20,000, $25,000.
And to have the president's daughter and son-in-law just get passed despite the glaring red flag, like, it's a huge security concern. And basically anyone who ever brings up any security risk that Clinton was is lying to themselves, or there's no comparison here. Any security risk that was caused by what Clinton did with the server is dwarfed by what's going on with just Jared and Ivanka alone.
Okay. Well, you know, did you also see there was a news clip circulating of when the story about Jared came out, because the Ivanka thing I didn't even know, but it was a interview she gave where she was being asked about security clearance and she was like, absolutely not. Like, there was no time at which there was any interference in our security clearance. And, you know, it just kind of was like in a matter of routine. I mean, it's just the gall with which these people lie. There's just complete shamelessness. I couldn't believe it. And now we know she got the same deal. It's awful.
So Ivanka is definitely a better liar than her father is, though, because when Trump is forced to lie point blank, when he's not just rambling and making stuff up, when he's forced to, like, answer a question specifically as a lie, you can tell he is so bad at it. Ivanka just stone cold tells that lie without a blink.
She's so polished. Yeah, she's good at it.
She's a much more polished liar than Trump is, who relies basically on bombacity to get through it.
All right. Okay. Well, I guess those are those all our big stories this week?
That's a fraction of them, but yes, those are the big ones for now.
In order of priority, we'll go there. All right, well, thanks for updating us, Susan, on all this stuff. And what's going on in this next week? Is there anything big coming up that we should keep an eye out? Any hearings? Any other?
Felix Sater apparently is testifying before Congress.
Okay.
You know, I don't really, it's not going to be, I'll be surprised if it's useful. It'll be entertaining because it's Felix Sater. But if there's anyone I trust less than either Cohen or Trump, it's Felix.
Mm, okay.
Oh, the other story that like we've all like apparently just blanked out, because even though it is amazing, apparently Mariah Carey's ex-producer has sued Felix Sater for hacking into her phone and computer.
What? Okay. Yeah, I totally missed
that. I think it was Mariah Carey. I can't remember. Some celebrity had a producer or had an assistant that is now suing Felix Sater for hacking her phone and computer. Because
why?
2019 is like the big old Mad Libs of like random shit that can happen.
What is this? How did this happen? Okay, I don't know if you want to give us more details or just leave us hanging like that, but
that's all I got. I'm like, I saw that. I'm like, okay, you know what? This is, yep, it, that definitely
it's
happened.
Time to close the laptop. It's time to shut it all down. I think that's what that means. All right. Well, thanks so much, Susan. And thank you guys for tuning in. And we will be back in 7 days.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.